From unsolved mysteries to unexplained phenomena, from comedy gold to relationship fails, Amazon Music's got the most ad-free top podcasts, included with Prime. Because the only thing that should interrupt your listening is, well, nothing. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Tired of your car insurance rate going up, even with a clean driving record? You're not alone. That's why there's Jerry, your proactive insurance assistant. Jerry compares rates side by side from over 50 top insurers and helps you switch with ease. Jerry even tracks market rates and alerts you when it's best to shop. No spam calls, no hidden fees. Drivers who save with Jerry could save over $1,300 a year. Switch with confidence. Download the Jerry app or visit jerry.ai/libsyn today. That's jerry.ai/libsyn.
Welcome to Act 3, the podcast where we explore how to thoughtfully shape the rest of our lives. I'm your host, Kara Gray. This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my third act consultancy, where I help executives and professionals with a plan to intentionally design the rest of their lives. For more information, stay tuned until the end. Today, I welcome Alicia Johnson to the podcast. Alicia is a writer and transformation specialist exploring the intersection of creative narrative and personal renewal. Her forthcoming book, Buried Treasure, A Field Guide to Life-Changing Magic of Revealing Yourself, weaves together memoir and practical guidance, offering a framework for wonder-based trauma recovery and self-revelation. Currently, Alicia is at work on Hudson, a complex narrative exploring themes of visibility and generational healing. Her previous work includes Postiano, Ad Occhi Aperti, With Eyes Open, which examines artistic rebirth and creative partnership through the lens of sound design and professional renewal. Drawing on her previous career in global strategic leadership, Alicia now selectively guides one transformation project annually, choosing organizations where her integrated approach to creative narrative and strategic renewal can create lasting impact. Her methodology, grounded in what she terms active hope, stems from Seamus Heaney's insight that, quote, hope is not optimism, which expects things to turn out well, but something rooted in the conviction that there is good worth working for. Alicia's work demonstrates how creative practice and strategic insight can powerfully reinforce each other, leading to more authentic and sustainable transformation. Through her writing, selective consulting, and modeling a portfolio life integration, she shows how artistic expression and professional expertise can blend in service of meaningful change. Welcome, Alicia, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
Sure. So I usually do a little rewind because this is the Act 3 podcast, but there's something not in your bio that is incredibly significant at the moment, and that is the fact that you are signed as a Ford model. Ford, home of Naomi Campbell, Christy Turlington, Brooke Shields, the Ford modeling agency.
Yep.
And there's just been a big article where you're featured in Forbes, which I can link to in the show notes, that tells this story. But I kind of want to start there because I feel like it's going to weave into the other questions that I have for you. And I heard through our mutual friend that this was kind of an amazing thing. Like, you just walked into Ford, or just
it's true.
Tell me how this happens. I mean, yes, I mean,
it really is kind of a fairy tale story. So I modeled when I was young. I was a plus size model in the 80s, which was, you know, super unusual. You know, I kind of paved the way, you know, for the big models that are now, you know, normal in our lives.
Yeah.
So as I was finishing up writing this book, when I stopped modeling, I went behind the scenes. So I was a creative director, a director, you know, I wasn't in front of the camera anymore. And I thought, you know, the the subhead of this is the life-changing magic of revealing yourself. And I thought, it's probably time for me to come out from behind the camera again. And although the book is about revealing yourself to yourself, I mean, I'm not advocating that people, you know, like spring out and, you know, like all of that. It's really about revealing yourself to yourself. But for me, part of that was being seen again in this way. So I was in Manhattan and somewhat near the agency. And when I left modeling, I was with Ford, but okay. I stopped modeling before I did a job with Ford. So it was kind of like, I just moved to them. So it's kind of a heartbreaking thing in my life, you know, like,
yeah,
I never did that, you know? So anyway, I was kind of near the agency and I thought, you know, can't hurt for me to stop by. And I'd just gotten a haircut and I was feeling kind of sassy. And I went in and I saw in the front desk person and said, you have to show ID. So I got my ID out and I handed it to him and said, I'm going up to Ford. And he was like, oh, okay. And he looked down at the sheet and he said, you're not on the list. And I was like, oh. And I just sort of waited. And he said, I'll put you on. And set me up. And so.
Great security there at Ford.
So I went up and they no longer have a receptionist. Like at COVID, they stopped having a receptionist. So you just had to call. And I spoke to a woman, young woman, who said, oh, no, you just have to upload pictures to the website. And I was like, oh, okay. And so thanks very much. And I thought, well, there goes my shot. And I was getting into the elevator and I heard this man, you know, say, have you been helped? And I was like, well, she just told me I need to send up my pictures to Curve. That's the division that I would be in. So that's what is plus size at this point. So Curve. And he said, but I'm Curve. And I was like, oh, how special. And he just sort of was flustered and he was looking at me and he was like, sit. And I was like, okay. And so he went back and then I saw him walk by the door with another woman. And then he came out and said, would you mind coming in and meeting our director? And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. So I went in and the first question they asked me is, how did you even get up here? And I told them, and they all looked at each other and they're like, that never, ever happens. Never. Like one of our top models came in and she wasn't on the list and they wouldn't let her up and she was mad. So anyway, so we just laughed about it and we talked and, you know, I just said that I wanted to go back to Ford, you know, and I told them why and about my book and all of that. And Nanda Rai, who's my agent, she's the director. She was asking me questions, you know, and I was like, no, it's just what I want to do. And she's kind of seeing if I was like checking on other agencies and stuff. I was like, no, I'd just like to be with Ford. And she's like, well, I would offer you a contract right now. And I said, oh, well, I would accept it right now. And so that's how it happened. And then, you know, I was kind of flustered and freaked out. And when I went downstairs, it wasn't the same guy at the desk. And I feel like, you know, so in the fairy tale movies, there's always like a weird angel that shows up in the place that, you know,
right.
that grants you access. So anyway, it's a joke between the three of us now. Like, you know, I can get through security. So
yeah,
it happened and they're marvelous and it's really fun and it does change things, you know, just I think it changes how you show up, you know, and that's something that's so central to the work that I'm doing right now about, you know, really being in yourself in the way that you show up in the world and, you know, central to the book that's coming out. And so I think it's a good instinct to stop by and to experience like how it's changed me and, you know, just Yeah, so I think that, like, one thing that I think that's important for me to think about, you know, so I'm 64 now, and like modeling again, it's really what it's sort of evolved into for me is that it's not so much about like fame or anything like that, but there really isn't representation in the high fashion world of mature curvy bodies. You know, there's right. I'm really happy to say that there are mature women on the runways, and, you know, so that move has been made, but there's not mature curvy women. And I think we have these generations that are growing up that it's okay to be curvy. You know, you don't have to be a 00, but then it's as though it drops off at a certain age.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's about, like, again, sort of paving a way for people to show up and be present and to be seen, not just be dismissed because you don't fit a certain standard. And, you know, the Forbes article that you talked about, one of the most fascinating things to me is conversations that I've gotten into with younger women who are like, you know, they're, and younger. So, okay. So younger to me is 35 or 40, you know, they're little babies. To me.
Sure.
So, but, you know, like, they're afraid, they're falling off the radar, you know, like, they're no longer that thing that we've all dealt with, you know, that you're no longer relevant.
And
I think that, you know, I think that's I have the ability to, like, sort of stand in there and do the good fight. And so I feel good about that, you know, like, okay, I'll do it.
And you should. Yeah. It's amazing.
Right.
Go ahead.
So anyway, that's the story of Ford. And, you know, it is. And like you said, it is all woven together. And it felt to me like it would be good for me to do it. It would be good for the book to do it. I'm learning that it's really good for other people, you know, just like it was when I was young, you know, like, there were no large size models. So, like, after a show, I remember, like, the young women that would come up around me and just want to understand, like, where do you buy clothes? How do you decide? How did you figure out, like, what to wear? You know, like,
because
there were no options, you know? So I think that's cool. You know,
it's very cool. I'm totally impressed.
It's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very exciting. And it's interesting, too, because actually I publish a weekly newsletter, and this week is all about our attitude towards aging, which is one of the things that I talk about with my clients. There's like 12, like, things that you should discuss to have a successful transition into your third act, basically. Right. That's how my methodology works. And one of them is attitude about aging. So you're definitely speaking to that as well. And tell me about your attitude towards aging and how it feels like being a younger model versus now being a more mature model, and what that brings up for you.
Well, first of all, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I think aging is awesome.
Yes.
You know, I think there's lots of scary things about it. There's lots of things, like I said, you know, like, you can start to feel irrelevant in your career. You know, there's weird phases that you go through where, you know, your wisdom is being perceived as being over the hill, or, you know, that kind of thing. I grew up, my career was in advertising and design. And, you know, I was a hotshot. You know, I was a young gun, lots of notoriety for, you know, breaking the rules and all that kind of stuff. And it's hard to be a young gun in your 50s, you know, and so you sort of have to transition into, you know, more of your wisdom and that kind of thing. And so I was mindful of that, and, you know, consciously taking time to transition to be, like, positioning myself so that my wisdom had value rather than my ability to work 3 days straight. You know, like,
right. Right. No more 24-hour
eating prep. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not sleeping on the floor to meet this deadline kind of thing, you know? So, so there was that. But then there's also like, I don't know exactly how to say it, but I'm striving to move through this phase with more curiosity about the future than regretting what's no longer. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
The way I wrote it to myself in notes the other day is that it would be so foolish for me to regret having been young. Like, what a silly idea that is. Like, oh, I just, it's so sad that I was young once. You know, like, what? You know, like, yeah, I was young once. It was awesome. But that's no more. And and in 20 years, you know, I will be young myself now. You know what I mean?
Correct. So
I think that just maintaining a sense of curiosity and my husband and I are planning right now. We own a very large property in upstate New York, and it's gorgeous. I love this place, but I do not want to live here in my 70s. It's too big. The ice is too. It's like we're in the middle of ice right now. It's a death trap, you know. Yeah. It's like
to be so careful.
Yeah, I don't. So we're changing. And at first it was really just lament, and now it's excitement. And what we're, can I tell you a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Inside scoop right here.
We, the house that we're thinking of. So our house now is, you know, classic old farmhouse. It's gorgeous. You know, it's a house.
Like typical upstate New York Queens.
Yeah. You know, and we're going to build, we're building two very long steel sheds that will be, one shed will be housed, my husband housed his studio. So he has a photo studio, a design studio, and a workshop. So that's one long shed. And then the other long shed that faces south will be the house and my greenhouse. So, and then in the greenhouse will be my lap pool, the saltwater lap pool. And so, you know, have you ever seen those big glass garage roll gates?
Yes. Yeah.
So it'll have this
hose.
So then in the summertime it's open and, you know, it's a swim pool on it, you know,
indoor, outdoor.
But in the wintertime I can swim, no ice. I don't have to, you know, so, and all one level, everything's one level. So I'm built with, you know, wet room, bathrooms, and, you know, everything. So, like, we don't have to worry about, like, oh, what about, you know, when we can't climb stairs or, you know, things later on.
Yeah.
Which this house,
away.
You know, this house, the like, this house would be disastrous to be, you know, it's just, it's stairs and old and ice and gorgeous. I don't want to demean my home. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not the home for us in this next phase. So we went from being really sad about that to being really excited. You know, like it's fun. It's genuinely so exciting to think about this. And the idea that I'm going to have a saltwater lap pool in a greenhouse, and that's where my studio will be. Oh my God. I can't wait. I just can't wait. Literally, I can't wait. So, you know, I think the reason I went on so long about that is that I think that is maybe not a snapshot, a short pill of like how I and my husband are approaching aging, you know, like be pragmatic, but not let that limit you. Instead, let it inform new dreams.
Yeah. Let it inspire innovation in your lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fantastic way to think about it.
Oh, and also, you know, when we met in our 20s and we were punks, you know, like we lived in like such bad lofts that we did all the work on and, you know, like in, you know, neighborhoods, you know, like
a little sketch.
Like, yes. Super sketch. And so it's also something really fun about imagining this that is, it's more about who we are deep down, and that the space and what we can do in it is more important than like what the drive up looks like, or, you know, it's more about us than, you know,
the optics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although those optics sound very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think like, I do think, well, my husband is a designer amongst other visual forms of art, but I know that it will be gorgeous. It'll just be funky, you know, like
Living
a shed.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But it's a wicked shed.
Yeah. Oh, this is so good. This is good. Good. Good stuff. Let's get back to your book.
Okay.
Buried Treasure, and it explores wonder-based trauma recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain this concept and how it differs from traditional approaches to healing?
Sure. So I have done a lifetime of research on this. I was, is it okay for me to... I was raped when I was,
I was
little. Yeah. Okay. So I was raped for a period of months by my paternal grandfather when I was 5. And it it was not okay to talk about in my family. And, you know, it was messy. And, it wasn't resolved. And then, you know, I went through therapists and, you know, but honestly, like a lifetime of research on this and things that had worked for me. And then in COVID, I thought, oh, one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to synthesize all of this research that I've done over the years. And then it led to more research, you know, that kind of thing. I'm a creative director and a strategist. But I think that at the soul level, I don't know. I can't separate them. I'm a strategist though. And like as a strategist, as you get information and you gather it all together, it's like, it's physically impossible to not turn it into action. It's
you can't stop yourself.
Can't stop. It's like an Australian shepherd. They got to run and bring, you know, like as a strategist, you got data, you got to do something with it. So I started looking at it, and like a lot of the work that's out there it's very academic, and it's so removed that when you start to read it, it's almost like it starts to trigger bad things before you can, you know, you've got to dissect it and go through the analysis, that kind of stuff. So I thought, what if this was more personal? So there's an aspect of memoir to it, so that like it's kind of like I'm going with you through this, and I give examples of my life and how these things worked for me. So it's kind of like a cookbook in that way, you know, like there's these things that you can try doing that, and you know, mix and match and jump in where you want, that kind of thing. And so there was one piece of research that really just kind of, you know, shook my mind, which was that one of the things that trauma does in particular is it affects a part of your brain. And I won't go into like hardcore brain science here, but it affects a part of your brain that has to do with imagination and time and play. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, like, if trauma has tamped that down, and I would ask people, like, if you personally have experienced trauma, or if you know people who have, be curious about how they play. Because a lot of times people who've experienced trauma don't. They have a hard time. So it's just, it's your brain. And so anyway, I thought, well, what if part of what this was, one more point. So one of the leading researchers on trauma is, I don't know why it does that. One of the leading researchers on trauma is Dr. Basil van der Kolk. And his book, The Body Keeps the Score, has been on the New York Times bestseller list for decades. And it is a magnificent book, but it is extremely academic. And it's really written for therapists. And yet it's given to, people.
Yeah.
So the idea that if the body keeps the score and clues to how to move through trauma are in your body and play and imagination have been tamped down, what are the things that you can do to kind of bring those things back online in your brain? So it's a really basic premise. And I'm very quick to say that the practices in this, there's a phrase that scientists use a lot that correlation is not causation. So, it's not that if you do this, it causes that, but there's so much correlation. There's so much knowledge. There's so much empirical data on, bringing these kinds of behaviors back online in your brain helps you. And so if bringing fun and imagination and play and curiosity back online in your brain is going to help you move through trauma, I say do it, right?
Yeah. Plus it's fun. Right? It's like all these good juicy things of life are going to be healing for you.
They're healing. And the most glorious thing is as you're doing them, your brain's native capacity to create neural pathways is in action. So one of my details is I grew up at the beach. I love swimming in the ocean, and I hadn't gone swimming in the ocean in decades. And I took myself to the Caribbean to go swimming while I was writing this. And I was like, I'm getting in the water, damn it. And I lost my point. One of the things that I read about is that as you do these kinds of things that are fun, and I'm really adamant about choose things that are fun that you really, really want to do. By doing them, you're creating new neural pathways. So the way I think of it is I had a teeny tiny little, barely visible path to the beach. And the more I go to the path, the more I go to the beach, it's like I'm going to have a 6-lane superhighway all to myself between me and the beach. See what I mean?
So yeah.
I think that's a really important thing, particularly for people who've experienced trauma, to open up those pathways and to be open to being curious and having fun. And so the Seamus Heaney quote that you read at the beginning is central to the book, hope is an optimism which expects a good outcome. It's rooted in, I should know this by heart, but in the conviction that there's good worth working for. And hope is that there's this little special thing that curiosity and wonder are one of the things that can spark your brain into a particular state where you're more open to possibilities than fearful of bad things. So that's where the active hope idea comes in, is that you're in curiosity, when you're in wonder, you're leaning in to what's possible. Instead of, I was talking about it in aging, you're leaning into possible instead of just regretting what's happened or so sad about what you didn't get to do. Like, I could have sat there and cried my eyes out that I've gone swimming in too long, you know, but no, like, okay, research says. So anyway, that's sort of the, you know, the, in a nutshell. So it's like, truly in a nutshell, the book is about making friends with your brain and having fun moving your body. And quite miraculous things happen when you do that. And, you know, there are exercises in there that are specifically around trauma and that kind of thing. But I'd say that's the gist, you know. And I do want to say, when people talk about trauma, it's almost always with a cap T, you know, like, oh, bad. And there's actually, like, you'll find in social situations, there can even be kind of competition about, like, who's had
the most.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, I think there's Saturday Night Live sketch about it, you know. Like,
my trauma is worse than yours.
Yeah. But so I thought I should have a philosophy on this. And it comes from just actually talking with my husband, and who had a lovely childhood and grew up with, you know, in a good home and all those kinds of things. And when we first met, he would be sort of like, well, you know, he wouldn't want to tell me his sad story because it's like, well, it's nothing compared to you. And it's like,
right.
And we would talk about it. But now I have sort of a simple way of thinking of it. And that is that everyone has experienced trauma. Everyone. We all have.
Yeah.
And that my trauma is the biggest hard thing that I've gone through. And your trauma is the biggest hard thing that you've gone through. And they're our own personal measure of hardship. They're not comparable. And they're individual. And so I think that anybody who read this would understand certain aspects of it from their own lives, and that, like, maybe a certain part of themselves has been sort of sequestered away because it got smashed down when they were little or when they were 40, you know, like at a, you know, big job interview, you know, whatever happened, you know, I can name 1,000 things of friends and colleagues and our nation. You know, we're living in a really divided nation that, you know, there's a form of cultural trauma going on right now, whichever side of the aisle you're on.
Yeah.
I think it's important to just be transparent about that. Like, it's the measure of your own personal hardship, not some, you know, you don't count if you didn't get this or this didn't happen to you or, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, no, for sure. I'm excited to read this book because I do think so many things are applicable to aging as well. And like you said, everybody has some trauma to work through. And I love that it's actionable. Like, there's exercises, there's things to do to move through. So by the time this podcast comes out, the book will very much be available, and you can certainly find it at the link in the show notes. I want to move on to at this time, your Act 3 that's happening right now, is you also take on one transformational project per year. Mm-hmm. Tell me, like, what's an ideal transformational client to work with, or what's an example of one that you have worked with so people can get an idea of? I mean, you're only taking one per year, so maybe I shouldn't even be talking about this, but I think it's important to understand the work that's really driving you.
So I think that the criteria, well, first of all, the criteria is that the person leading it from the brand is open to these ideas, you know, like that it's a quite holistic way of looking at how to transform a brand. And it can be perceived as somewhat soft, you know, like active hope. But, you know, when I look at the work that I've done over the decades, one of the very first things that needs to be done for most brands is to write or rewrite a vision statement. Like, where are we going and why and what matters to us? And all of these things boil down to what's important. So if you look at, you can't go into a brand reposition or transformation with just optimism. Like, you know, no matter how
open a prayer,
it's going to work. You know, no matter how good the planning, no matter how well funded the project, bad things are going to happen. Things that you didn't plan on happen. Things that you thought were going to work didn't work. Things you thought that culturally would be adopted were rejected. You know, like, if all you have is optimism, you're going to give up. But if you have the conviction that these fundamentals are worth working for, then you take the hit and you keep moving. You keep going. You stay on track. You revise. But, you know, you don't give up. You don't think, oh, well, that didn't work, that kind of thing, which in a lot of efforts, that can happen. So I've led a lot of brands. First of all, an open heart to being able to look at it that earnestly. It is not easy. It sounds easy, but it's hard to look at the truth and to say, you know, oh, this is what we really, really want to do, but we're probably not going to get the funding, or, you know, half of the board is against it, or, you know, whatever the truths are so you can get to the foundational gist of where you're going to need to move things and change things. So, just being able to have an open conversation about that.
Yeah. And as we know, so much of that industry is smoke and mirrors. So it's a little bit, I can see why you're taking on one like very special client every year in this space, because I imagine it's certainly not everyone. It's not the majority by far.
No. Yeah. No. And I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. The reality is it takes longer than a year. So, you know, so there's an overlap.
Yeah.
You know, so and like a true transformation with a client that is willing to genuinely do the work is, and all of that, like, I don't have to be involved in, but, you know, you stay involved in a little bit, but it takes like 5 years to do a real transformation on a brand. I only have so many of those to commit to again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're at that point in your life as well, where that's also a personal decision, I'm sure, where you're just like, this is how I want to work. This is the type of work I want to do. And that's it.
Right. And I'm writing, you know, I'm working on my next book, and I have life to live. So
yeah,
you know, there's lots going on. I thought of something I was going to say and I forgot. Mm.
It's okay.
So I think that you probably hear that a lot in your interviews.
I hear that a lot in my own interviews when I'm speaking to clients. Yeah, I'm like, what was that I was going to say?
I better write that down.
Exactly.
Yes.
But I do.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do want to talk about what's next. That's my next question for you, and talk about Hudson a little bit and anything else that you want to talk about in terms of future for you.
Okay. Well, I told you about my house.
Yes. That I had no idea about. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so Hudson is a novel. It's interesting, actually. Well, at least to me. When I started Buried Treasure, I didn't know that I was starting a book. I was gathering the research, and it was kind of personal, but also Hudson is a novel that continues a protagonist that I've written about a few times. And in this novel, she's more of like a mentor shepherd to a young woman who's experienced quite severe abuse. And as I was working on it, there were certain things that I was running into that I could see perfectly, but I just didn't feel right. And in I can only know this in retrospect, I think. I didn't know it at the time. I moved on, and it just never felt right to me to say that I had writer's block, because I didn't feel like I had writer's block. What I came to understand, it sounds a little cheesy, but it's really in earnest. I had authenticity block, and I didn't feel like I could write what that character needed to be able to do until I had finished synthesizing and processing all of this research. So now I feel good. I'm do it.
Processed.
I feel like I can engage with it and be genuine with myself and with the characters. And so that's next. I'm actively writing, and it's kind of a story that crosses multiple generations, and all of them lived in this house that I live in now, that coincidentally I'll be moving out of.
Right.
So, which also seems sort of odd in a weird sort of way. But anyway, and it goes, it goes backward. It goes back into the 20s, 1920s. And the villain in it is so awful. And that's a real, that's challenging to write. But it's also quite, we live with a lot of supervillains in our world right now. And I think it's good for story to help us process that. We need great stories right now to help us as humans, evolve. And we face a lot of challenges, so I think we need the best imaginations on the best possible outcomes to help show the way.
So, got it. Excited for that book too. And back to the modeling, are the steps there to, pitch yourself and having mature perv women in campaigns? Like, is there any strategy that you're working on there? I'm guessing there is.
Well, there is. I have genuinely the most amazing agents, Nanda Rai and Paula Santos. They're amazing, and they're pushing hard, and they believe in me. And we're going into Fashion Week, and there's stuff happening. It's between somebody and somebody in a whisper somewhere, but we'll see. Yeah. But I think the main thing to me is to not stop. And to keep telling the story, I think that mature women who show up with style and grace and fierceness are so important. This is no time to back down.
It is not.
And
it's such an opportunity, I feel, at this point in our lives where we don't have a lot of those insecurities or confidence issues or things that stopped us in the past from really shining.
Right.
I think it's the time for
mature women. And plus, no matter, no, I love this. This is a calculus that is my favorite, is you can't get it wrong. And no matter what, it will be fun.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't get this wrong.
No, you're leading the way.
Right. And no matter what happens, it's a gas. And, right. You know, like, I get to do fun stuff, you know? So, like, there's no lose, you know? It's sometimes it's, you know, like, in anything in life, you know, when you put yourself out there, there's rejection, you know, and sure. Not everybody loves you and all that kind of stuff, whatever, you know?
Right.
But that's the great part of being older too, is that you have the wisdom to know, like, you could cut this if you want.
Yeah. Well, and intellectually, you know why it's challenging in this space.
Right.
Also with the advertising background, like, you know what the challenge is.
I saw that.
So it's got nothing to do with you.
Yeah. But my husband says to me, this is what I meant about you could cut this if you want. But my husband will say to me quite often, never forget you are Alicia Bucking Johnson.
That's staying in, Alicia. And so, on that note, I want to thank you so much for your time. This has been a really amazing interview, and I'm so excited for my audience to hear it. And I'm wishing you much success in all the things.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a super joy for me. Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my consulting practice. I help executives, professionals, and business owners plan the non-financial part of their third act, like how to discover new purpose and how you want to spend your time. I offer a one-on-one third act blueprint package where we work together to discover some new avenues for exploration in your next chapter. My work with you is completely custom and will provide you with a ton of resources and support as you transition to this new stage of life. Don't miss the opportunity to intentionally design the rest of your life. For all the details, please go to goodmorningfreedom.com.